Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? James Coe here on the NFL Fantasy Live podcast, joined alongside MG, my guy, Marcus Grant. What's up?
What's going on, James? It's good to be here.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. We got the whiz kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gailhar. What's cracking?
I don't know. Feeling good today. Had a good night's sleep last night.
Oh, yeah?
You know, there's caught up on the news. Started Master of None. Watched Better Call Saul. It's just good. It's a good week so far.
Master of None. Better Call Saul. You got the good Netflix fired up.
Good middle of the week so far.
I like it. And, of course, the Fantasy Maverick himself.
What's going on?
What is that? You got a Lakers hat on.
Lakers hat, yeah.
Okay.
I was wearing this lucky Lakers hat.
We knew that it was going to be rigged, so.
I think I spelled out exactly what was
going to
happen.
Exactly.
You're talking about the lottery?
About the lottery. And the fact that they have people in the room,
yeah,
there, like, are they just sworn to secrecy? Like,
pretty much,
you guys
yeah.
have to, like,
look,
if you tell everybody what's happening,
right,
then you're never covering the league again. You'll never get credentials.
That's exactly right.
Somebody
exactly
will write a tell-all.
They had
our NBA insider here, James Coe, can tell us that.
No. Listen, they had a less than 50% chance of getting a top three pick. Less than 50% chance.
It's like a coin flip.
And they got the number two pick.
So it was like a coin flip, and it landed heads.
To get a top two pick, I think they had like – it was like a 35% chance of
so you're
getting
telling
a top
me
two.
There was a chance.
Wait, what pick did they get? I didn't
they
pay attention.
Two. They got number
I was,
two.
I was too busy tilting over the news to watch the draft lottery.
There was a 100% chance that they were getting the number two pick.
100% chance. I agree
I'd
with
say
that.
About 98 because I thought
agree.
Like maybe they'll get number one.
Right. There was that little 2%. So there you go.
I will say my favorite part of it are all the Joel Embiid memes that have come out of it with his facial expressions during the draft.
He was having a good time.
The lottery, they've been
great.
He was indeed. We've got a great show lined up in front of you today. We're going to start our divisional breakdowns moving forward. We're going to literally chop up every single team in the NFL, and we'll go by division. Today, we talk about the division of the reigning Super Bowl champs, the Patriots. We'll start in the AFC East.
Ooh, whoops. I mean, sorry.
We'll close out your show with Daily Dive. Oh, we got a special guest today as well, the great Scott Fish from ScottFishBowl.com. If you don't know about the great Scott Fish
Bowl,
you're about to find out. But we will start the show as we always do with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
I watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to have your kids, have your wife.
It's a relatively slow part of the season, no? So we only got one headline
We're
for you.
Entering the slow part of the season.
There you go. Philadelphia has signed LeGarrette Blount. He joins a very crowded backfield mix of Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles. They drafted the kid out of San Diego State, Donnell Pumphrey. They've got Wendell Smallwood there as well. I'm imagining former Oregon Duck Byron Marshall's going to be gone. But, man, that's a crowded room, Adam Rink.
It really is. But then you think about some of the names that you just read off, and you're
okay.
Like, yeah, washed.
What?
Like, what is, like, sorry about your luck, Wendell Smallwood. Like,
okay.
The only reason they bring in a player like this is because he's obviously not performing up to the expectations that they're holding for him. And I believe that the Eagles are under the assumption that they're pretty good and think that they can contend, and they really want to give some help to Carson Wentz down there.
Yeah.
And I think this is a pretty good combination with him and Darren Sproles. Sproles going out and doing his thing, and LeGarrette Blount really being that hammer. And when I look at the way that offense is set up, and I know our good friend Brad Evans was getting some heat on Twitter for this, but I don't see him quite getting the yardage he had last year, and he's obviously not going to get 18 touchdowns. But nine
regression,
touchdowns,
bro. No,
but nine touchdowns seems like a legitimate. It seems like a legitimate estimation for him.
All right. By the way, it's reportedly a one-year deal worth up to $2.8 million. I would say that's a team-friendly deal. Although, again, LeGarrette Blount has been, you know, he had a great season last year, but he's been up and down.
But he's really, one of the things that stands out about him is that he's really been a team guy. And he really, I mean, that's why he was so successful with the Patriots, is that he really bought into just doing what was asked of him. And if you saw the celebration after the Super Bowl win, like Bill Belichick, there was a lot of fondness.
True.
There, which it's a little scary, like how much that Bill Belichick loved him, but just like Yeah, we're getting 30 other guys to fill in for you. And I know we'll talk about that a little bit forward.
But. I do think this backfield, as crowded as it's going to be, should have a relatively clear division of labor, though. Like, they need somebody to be a more primary early down guy, and that's what they brought LeGarrette Blount in. They also, our friend John Paulson from 4for4 had tweeted out this morning, they had the fifth most rushing attempts in the NFL inside the five-yard line last year. Hmm. The individual leader in that category was LeGarrette Blount. So while he won't have the high volume of scoring opportunities that he had in the crazy good New England offense, should still have good options there. And then with Pumphrey, the reports that they're going to play him in the slot a bunch.
That's interesting.
They still got Sproles there. And with Matthews, let's not forget he's coming off a serious neck injury like this, and he's going to count like $4 million against their cap this year. This signing could be the end of Ryan Matthews in Philadelphia.
Wow.
I fully expect that it is the end of Ryan Matthews in Philly. Yeah, I mean, I think he's gone. I was, I think, one of the few Ryan Matthews defenders last year, mostly because I just had him kind of slotted as a flex guy. Like, I think people overvalued Ryan Matthews, and so then his production became disappointing. But I do see LeGarrette Blount stepping in, and it's not an identical role to what he had in New England, but I think it's going to be very similar in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, again, I'm with Rank, I'm with Brad Evans. I think 9 touchdowns is very possible this year in this offense.
Well, I mean, especially if Ryan Matthews is gone, but you're right. I mean, it's interesting, though. They do have – I mean, you talk about Darren Sproles. He's getting up there in age. Ryan Matthews is – I mean, he's not old by any stretch of the imagination. And then Wendell Smallwood is there as well. So, I don't know. I'll be interested to see, again, if Ryan Matthews does get let go – then you're right, Alex. The division of labor there becomes much more clear, and I would imagine LeGarrette Blount's value actually is pretty nice going into next year.
So I'd see him somewhere around RB25.
Yeah, I was going to say he's in that RB2.
Low-end RB2.
RB2, RB3 range right there.
All right, so there you go. All right, let's break down the AFC East, and we'll start with your defending Super Bowl champions, the Patriots, who went 14-2 last year. Tom Brady, slated to play a full season, was one of the best per-game quarterbacks last year. Marcus Grant, your thought on Tom Brady in 2017?
I mean, he's still breathing, right?
And he is indeed.
And he's going to put on a uniform, right?
Yes.
You're going to be fine. Nothing's going to change.
He's, QB2?
He's still, I don't know about QB2, but he's a top-5 quarterback.
You put above him.
Aaron Rodgers, that's it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Marcus said I don't know about QB2.
Oh, okay.
Aaron Rodgers, so I go Rodgers. I could see Breeze being ahead of him. I could see Matt Ryan being ahead of him. So that's 3 right there. All right, so 4.
Okay. he's pretty clear QB2 to me. I
feel like that's kind of a, you know, whatever. It's a quibble. You know, like saying if you're talking QB2 versus QB4 or 5, I mean,
you're happy to have both
of them.
I see what you're saying. All right, they also added 49 running backs in the offseason.
Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate. We got to fact check
that. That's what I reported earlier.
That's about 49, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Sounds about right. Adam, rank your take on the Patriots backfield.
Yeah, it's a little disconcerting to look at all the names and just be thrown off by it because you see a bunch of, oh, who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? But I think the one thing about Belichick, and this proved to be accurate last year, was if you take some time to study his opponent, and it's a dangerous thing to do, but to try to get into the game plan, like what are they going to try to do to this team? How are they going to try to attack it? That you can reasonably handicap the position and kind of figure out, like,
is it worth it?
This seems like a LeGarrette Blount game. Well, I mean, if you're drafting running back, like, we have Rex Burkhead in our League of Leagues. By the way, did we get 2 saves last night?
I'm not sure. I know we got 1.
Is that happening?
I know we got 1.
There's your weekly James Co. Adam Rank, League of Leagues.
Right. It's good. That thing. And if Bud Norris didn't have a 4-out save on Tuesday, on Monday, they would have brought him in on Tuesday. But that notwithstanding, I think when you look at, you're going to end up probably, like, I think a lot of people will end up with one of these running backs. You're probably not going to draft all of them, but you'll end up with Gillislee or Burkhead or somebody like that because we have Burkhead.
Yeah.
And it's really going to just take some time for us. Well, we're in a 14-team league, and it might necessitate us to start Burkhead every week. But there will be times where you can kind of look at the matchup and say, like, well, the Bills are, you know, 28th against the run, and they're really bad here or there. And I'm sorry for throwing the Bills under the bus without them, you know, getting a chance to defend themselves already. But I think that you can really, if you put in the work, you can figure, well, let us put in the work.
Sure.
Like, we will tell you every
exactly.
week.
That's true.
Which, you know, I think that should be a little bit of a, in addition to the danger zone or anything like that, I go, I'm going to actually just start a segment, whether it's on my own YouTube page.
It's just Patriots.
If I'm on a fantasy show.
Just Patriots.
This is the fantasy running back of the week. The Patriots fantasy running back of the week.
I mean, we joked last year about doing a segment for YouTube or for social where we put the headshot of each of the different Patriots running backs on a die and just rolled it every week. And
I like it.
This week you start James White.
And no analysis?
Nope, that's just that. That's it. That's it.
And then or
we stack it up with how accurate the die is.
I like it. I like that a lot. Alex, we'll stay with you. Brandon Cooks was added to the offense, an already potent offense in the offseason. How do you see him playing into that Patriots pass game?
This is a really, I mean, I guess puzzling maybe is a little too aggressive, but you guys touched on this in your episode of the Fantasy Hipsters, where his move over here is great for football, but it's not really an upgrade for fantasy football. When you're looking at it, he averaged about 123 targets per year the last 2 years in New Orleans, where he was a top 12 wide receiver each year. But now that he's in New England, with all those running backs, Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Danny Amendola, and Malcolm Mitchell, where are his targets going to come from, and how is this going to shake out? This Patriots offense has, mutated itself, for lack of a better term, over the years. And targets have shifted throughout depending on, as Rank said, their matchups and their personnel. But I think at best it's kind of a lateral move for Brandon Cooks. But I think I honestly think he's going a little high for my liking in fantasy drafts right now. I think we should accept him coming down a little bit because of the guys that I mentioned that are going to be there and eat up targets as well.
I'm really excited about him. I think last year, Julian Edelman, I had 158 targets. And I think that they're moving on from Edelman.
I agree.
That's just the way that Bill Belichick operates. We talked about LeGarrette Blount. Like, he loved LeGarrette Blount like it was a member of his family. And then he was like, okay, now we're going. He did that to Wes Welker. There was even an NFL Films thing where Wes Welker was talking about, like, God, number 11 looks great out there. Yeah. Belichick just matter-of-factly told him, he's going to take your job. So that's what it is. And I think that's the way it's going to be with Brandon Cooks, is that he's the guy that's going to end up getting – the 150 targets, and then you look at the way the targets were.
You think Brandon Cooks is going to get 150 targets in New England next year?
But you look at the way that the targets were dispersed last year. You know, Martellus Bennett had 73. He's gone. Chris Hogan had 57. I think James White will probably be right around that 86 range again. Gronkowski, is he going to play?
Last year was different, though, because Gronk was injured a lot. They didn't have Malcolm Mitchell to start the year because he had the elbow thing or whatever.
Right.
So that one, that had to be so highly, and Deion Lewis was out for most of the year. Oh, by the way, they didn't have Tom Brady. So the offense almost had to be so concentrated through Edelman. And while I don't disagree with you two that his time in New England is entering the twilight, I think it's too aggressive to assume that they're just going to cast him aside.
And just give him zero.
And just give him zero targets. Yeah. Like, he's going to have a big role.
He'll
in
have a
the
role.
Offense still.
Legit- I think it's also that at the same time, it's a little downplaying to say that, like, he's not going to come in and be the number one guy. They gave up a first round pick for him. You don't do that for a guy who's going to come in and get 47 targets.
No. I'm just saying, like, I was looking at it back. If you go back to 2014, Gronk had 21.5% of the targets. Edelman had 22%. Brandon LaFell had 19.5%, and the running backs combined had 16.4%.
Is there?
That's kind of more of the split I'd envision here, but, like, you know, that's not something that I think I want to go throw a third-round pick at right now.
So, legit, is there a non-Gronk Patriot you would select before, like, the seventh round?
I mean, I'd take Cooks in round
six or seven?
Five.
Round five?
Yeah.
I love upside, but that's too aggressive for me.
Fifth round.
Mostly because on a week-to-week basis, I still see him being the Brandon Cooks we've all come to know and love. He's going to be highly volatile every single week. There's going to be a three-touchdown game in his future. I can just see it.
Got to ride that wave, baby.
You know what I mean? But there's going to be a lot of games where he's just going to be completely iced out of the offense. So, I don't know, man.
That's everybody.
But in
the fifth round, though, that's a lot of draft capital.
On my fantasy league, since May 1st, factoring in the draft and recently, just in league since May 1st, Brandon Cooks is going 21st overall on average.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, that's too high.
Or average pick, excuse me, is 28th overall.
That's too much.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you wait till, if you can find him in the fifth round, I mean, he's probably not going to be there, but if you're hoping to get him in the seventh or something, you're never going to see him.
All right, Rob Gronkowski, speaking of targets, is coming off literally, not an exaggeration. I exaggerate a lot. This is not an exaggeration. His eighth surgical procedure of his career. He's had a back, an ankle, a forearm, a forearm, a forearm, a back, an ACL, and a back. surgery. 8 surgical procedures. What do you do with Rob Gronkowski, Adam Rank?
I'm not probably going to take him. The first Patriots player I would be taking is Brandon Cooks. And I love Gronkowski, and we broed it up for the Madden cover release a year ago, which it's popped up in my Facebook feed. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was fun. I remember when I was a part of that show. And so I look at it, and I look at, again, how the Patriots are probably going to try to use him. I just think that Belichick's going to be, well, okay, look at it in the way that they won a Super Bowl without him. So there's other guys who can clearly go out there and do the job. And that's not to say that they're going to ignore him, but he's not going to go out there and have the kind of dominant performances that led him to be sometimes a first-round draft pick a couple of years ago. So he's going to be good, but I think he's going to be overvalued. I mean, if he starts slipping in drafts, which I think is completely feasible, mm-hmm. I would certainly jump in on him.
I don't think he falls past round 3, though. I think he's gotten to round two. I think people are going to say, look, last year this guy went in the first round. He's still Rob Gronkowski.
That's true.
And I don't see him falling past round 3.
There's nothing that you said that was inaccurate. But if he falls and there's a bunch of scaredy cats in the league and he gets in the third round, perhaps the fourth round.
Third round is, I think, his floor.
I agree.
That's where he went at the start of the third round in our recent mock draft.
Makes sense.
You guys can all read NFL.com/fantasy.
Boom.
Oh, what? Oh, by the way, speaking of mock drafts, they're live now.
NFL.com/fantasy.
Wait, is that right?
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. I'm going to try it.
But Rank's having issues with the app, so forget that. I went into a mock draft this morning on the app. If you open up the app, the home screen, we'll have a thing. You can do it right there.
Let's go.
Get in there. Start practicing.
Oh, here we go.
Live draft will be next month.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, we'll move on.
There's a touchdown, Antonio Brown. I'm going to hit sign in. Oh, my gosh, it's working.
Oh, wow. Also, real quickly, I misspoke. Yeah. I was looking at redraft leagues, the MFL 10s, which is a lot of sharps and real diehards. Mm. Cooks is going on average about pick 24-25.
Ooh. That's too precious.
That's man. That's
steep.
24-25. That's like, right there at the end of the second round.
Yeah. And it's
you guys are no. – I love you guys. Negative. I really do. But
Negative. We go on to the Jets.
Caesar's ghost, man.
5-11 last year with the New York Jets. In the backfield, Matt Forte, Bilal Powell expected to split carries. Adam, rank your thoughts.
They're going to split carries, and Bilal Powell was really an effective running back, you know, and I think that, and this is no knock on Matt Forte, but at this stage of his career, he would be better suited for coming in later downs, not being an every down running back, trying to just selfishly think of extending his career, not necessarily helping out my fantasy team, because he still is a great receiver out of the backfield. And if the Jets were really concerned about winning, which I don't know that they are, but Bilal Powell should be their early down back, and Forte should be more of a complimentary running back at this stage of his career. I honestly wish he was traded to a different team. I wish, you know, it's like, come on, Jets, you're not competing. You brought him in for one last run.
Right.
Just let him go somewhere and see if he can have some fun. And but I still think Bilal Powell can be effective fantasy running back. He's going to be somebody who's going to be undervalued when you're going into your drafts, because nobody's going to want to take him.
No, he's going double-digit rounds.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be a steal. And if you're somebody who likes to load up on receivers earlier in drafts, or even if I don't care if you take running back in the first two rounds, Bilal Powell is somebody who should be on your roster.
I like that. Brandon Marshall is gone from the passing game. Ryan Fitzpatrick is gone as well. 37-year-old Josh McCown is expected to start, maybe. The Jets have the worst quarterback situation in the league, in my opinion. Meanwhile, Eric Decker and Quincy Anunua are their starting wideouts. Alex Gelhar, are you touching any fantasy asset in the passing game?
Yes, and here's why.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
Their value is incredibly depressed right now. Eric Decker is coming off a bunch of surgeries, might or might not be on the team. I feel like rumors have been swirling since like he got injured. Like, well, Jets are going to trade him or cut him or whatever. But right now, Eric Decker is going on my fantasy league. I was looking at this earlier, too. He's going in the 80s on average, pick 81 overall.
So early ninth.
Early ninth for a guy that all he does is catch touchdowns. Not too shabby. Quincy Anunua, on the other hand, is going with the 148th overall pick.
That's value.
15th round.
That's good value.
This is a guy that was a fringe wide receiver, too, for quite a while last year. Big-bodied, reliable pass catcher, can get open downfield. I think our boy Matt Franchise just wrote a love letter to Quinton Nunua recently, trying to embrace Jets Twitter with open arms after inciting their rage.
How did he do?
I didn't read the piece yet. I apologize to Franchise, but I know he was working on it. But anyways, I think both of these guys are in good situations because that pass catching core is kind of a mess.
Yeah.
So especially if both of these two are there and starting, the Jets could be playing from behind a lot, negative game scripts passing. We've seen this in the past with wide receivers on bad teams. It's a better bet to make than trying to get the running back on those things.
It's a good point.
If they're going to be down by a lot, they're going to be throwing the football. There's going to be volume.
Volume.
And that's what you need at the wide receiver position.
So here's I agree with all of that.
Yeah.
Here's my fear. Josh McCown's the quarterback. Not because Josh McCown himself is some sort of dumpster fire.
Okay.
But Josh McCown has a history of not playing 16 games,
true,
which then opens the door for Bryce Petty, or dare I say,
The Hack.
No.
Which really just throws everything into a tailspin if we see that. Now, I think The Hack is kind of a last – he really is a last-ditch effort, and I know that if our –
The Hack!
If our friend and Rich Eisen show producer Chris Law hears this, I will probably end up on his mysterious list. But I'm just saying, if The Hack has to get on the field, damn the torpedoes, it's all over.
Go for balls
for
everywhere.
Everybody. For everybody.
I love it. The Dolphins at 10-6. Last year, I'm curious to see what they do in 2017, year two under Adam Gase. Jay Ajayi, certainly the breakout star at the running back position last year, ran for 1,272 on a 4.9 yards per carry average. Your RB11 on the year. Boom or bust this year, Marcus Grant?
I guess boom in the sense that I think I expect some more consistency out of Jay Ajayi this year. I mean, obviously he finished well. He had good overall numbers, but I mean, let's be real.
What a roller coaster ride for Jay Ajayi last year.
Right. I mean, you start with him being left at home when the team went on the road for week one, him playing behind Arian Foster. Remember that? He played behind Arian Foster
for a couple of weeks, right?
Before he stepped in, you know, Foster retires, Ajayi takes the starting job, and then he takes off. But even then, I mean, he had a few really huge games. I mean, he had those back-to-back 200-yard games in the middle of the season.
Insane.
He had a couple of games later in the year. But I think this year I expect to see more consistency out of him. We'll still get some of the big games, I believe, but he knows he's the guy. There's nobody behind him. There's nobody that's really going to challenge
him. Top 10 fantasy running back?
I think he's a top 10 guy. But I think he's a top 10 guy that gives you more solid week-to-week output.
Ryan Tannehill was largely irrelevant in fantasy last year, but what does he do in year two, again, under Adam Gase, Adam Rank?
I really don't have high expectations for him, and he plays a position where it's not like you're scrambling to find talent, because we noticed when we did our own mock draft that the amount of great quarterbacks who are just flat out not being drafted, especially in 10-team leagues. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, he's going to be waiver wire fodder for pretty much the whole year. And you really got to start getting down into 14-team leagues, two quarterback type things, where if you're in a super flex as well, then, of course, you would look at him because you look at the offensive coordinator or the offensive system and a guy who's worked well with quarterbacks in the past and think, yeah, okay, like, this is somebody who's worth a shot. Like, if I've really screwed myself – and we're in a two-quarterback league, and I've only drafted one. It would kind of like being in the League of Leagues and forgetting to get steals. Or your steals guy gets demoted to AAA, which is awful.
Raul Mondesi, come back to us.
Please come back. We need the Royals to have their dumpster fire sale and then bring them back up.
How did we go down this road every time?
Because it just reminds me of it. But it's – you know, it's so weird. Like, obviously, Cutler – is going to go to the booth and do whatever he's going to do, which I think is going to be great.
He's not. He's going to be terrible.
Stop it.
He hates talking.
Yeah, I know.
He hates the media.
That's the best.
Back to the Dolphins.
This is a Dolphins-related thing, is that I think so little of Ryan Tannehill that I thought that Cutler was going to end up being the backup quarterback, because it's not inspiring.
All right, we'll stay in this passing game.
You know what, though? What's funny about him, too, is if you think about Tannehill, you're like, oh, like, very athletic, started at quarterback 1 year. What is it? Oh, it reminds me of Mitch Trubisky.
Oh, that's right.
Awesome.
Good job, Bears.
That'll be great.
We'll stay in this passing game. Jarvis Landry, expectations there, Alex Gelhar. And I'll give you this addendum as well. Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, Leonte Carew, any good sleepers in that mix?
I mean, Landry, at this point, we know who he is. He's, I mean, Harmon made this comparison to me. He's like old man Larry Fitzgerald, but at age 24, because he runs so much out of the slot, they run the same kind of routes. You're probably going to get about 1,000 yards and 5 touchdowns out of Landry. I was just looking at his career. I think he's only had 2 games in standard scoring. Non-PPR, PPR, he's excellent because he gets so many consistent targets,
yeah.
But non-PPR, he's had 2 games in his entire career where he's had more than 20 fantasy points. So the ceiling is super, super low with Jarvis Landry.
That's not exciting.
It's not exciting. He's going right now in NFL 10s, which are PPR, on average about pick 33. I guess that makes more sense in PPR. But standard, he's a guy I'm probably going to pass on at his value. He was the wide receiver 16 last year in standard, but I just don't get excited about starting Jarvis Landry. I think he's a very good player, but sometimes fantasy is about having fun. And as for these other guys, Parker's in an interesting situation because he's nearing the end of his rookie contract. He got called out by Adam Gase back in March about how he needs to be like a more of a professional and approach the game better. But then his offensive coordinator in May was like, I think Devontae Parker's going to have a gigantic year. So this is going to be a lot of smoke and narratives we're going to have to watch. But so far to this point, he's been rather inconsistent and had a lot of injuries that have kept him off the field. Meanwhile,
I saw smoke and narratives at the Roxy the other night. Super good.
Meanwhile, Kenny Stills is a guy that I like this year. I think I took him in round 14 or 15 of our mock. Mm. He's a deep threat, but Adam Gase loves him. There's a whole pattern. I tweeted about this. If you just search me and Kenny Stills, you'll be able to find it. But Gase loved him from the minute he joined the Dolphins, and they started using Stills more all across the formation, not just as a deep threat, running intermediate routes, working out of the slot. And if we're following the money, they just gave him a fat extension this offseason.
Interesting.
So he has a good role in this offense. Gase loves him. He's been there for a couple of years. He's a more consistent player than Parker.
Sold. I'm sold.
And, like, especially if you're looking at best balls or, like, a high upside flex guy, like, that's Stills right there for you.
Once you said upside and follow the money, I'm in. I'm in.
And James, he had a good 40 time, too.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, he's a deep threat. Come on,
so
let's go.
I think both could merit late-round consideration, but yeah. Stills is the one I'd rather take.
There's going to be somebody in that wide receiving core that breaks through and breaks out this year. I believe that much in Adam Gase. In year two of this offense, somebody's going to break through, and somebody's going to be a legit fantasy contributor there in South Beach. All right, we'll go to the Bills, 7-9 last year. Rex Ryan and his horrible ground-and-pound attack is finally dead. An overall horrible offense, but overall pretty good for fantasy purposes because you knew where the targets, you knew where the carries were going to go. Shady McCoy was your RB3 last year, trailing only David Johnson and Zeke Elliott. Hyper-efficient was Shady. 5.4 yards per carry, collected more than 1,600 total yards, 14 total touchdowns, the second most of his career. Adam, rank expectations for Shady.
Regression, brah.
Brah?
I don't even know what it means.
Yeah.
But just everybody throws that out. Shut up. I know what it means. Everybody just likes to throw that out. It's interesting, though.
Hey, Rank, let me help you. Wikipedia defines regression.
It's going to be interesting to see how they're going to attack it because Rick Dennison, coming over from the Denver Broncos, is in charge of the offense. And if you think of the last 2 years that he had in Denver, they were kind of straight dukes, like not good seasons, not great seasons for the running backs. But the one, it's tough because obviously being part of that Denver system, he's a little bit of a West Coast disciple.
Okay.
So it looks like they will use Shady McCoy in a more
wide open attack.
Well, better suited for his skill set. Like
right.
they were using him as a battering ram, which was going to end his career probably prematurely. But now there'll be a little bit of a change of pace to where like they'll get him the ball in space and out of the backfield. And when you look at that offense, you're like, yeah, there's not a lot of you touched on it. Like there's not a lot of dudes that you can count on this thing. I certainly don't count on Sammy Watkins being healthy for an entire season.
Nope.
Zay Jones, you'd be counting on a rookie to be their number one option if anything happens to Sammy. So I think there's a pretty good chance that Shady McCoy meets the expectations or meets the numbers that he did last year. 1,614, it's a lot. But when you're looking at this team and looking at what else are they going to be doing,
yeah,
I don't think that there's any other choice. And I think that McCoy, and for whatever reason, whenever you're doing mock drafts and things like that, he just doesn't – at least not to some of the ones that I've done. Like he doesn't go in a spot that I would expect him to go. Like, I see him as still available.
Are you seeing him falling?
Yeah, that's what for whatever reason. I'm like, I get it. Like, were you so enamored with Rex Ryan and his offense that you're like, I can't trust what Dennison is going to do? I mean, again, his last two years in Denver weren't great, but he's got a big enough resume. He's had enough success, fantasy performers, that
right?
you should give him the benefit of the doubt.
And isn't that the crazy thing? He's been successful.
And he's got a head coach that's not going to – who's a defensive guy who's not going to be over his shoulder being
that's
like, you got to do it this way. He's going to be able to do his own thing, and I think he's going to find ways. I mean, he's got to be excited to go out there because he's
going to be
one of the top running backs in the game, and he's going to be creative in finding opportunities to get him the football.
It's the easiest and laziest thing to say that he's not going to get to 1,600 total yards and 14 total touchdowns, but I promise you, you will hear that 100 times
But that's a joke. Like,
today.
Regression.
I know.
Like, that's everybody's default.
It's so lame. But by the way, something to keep in mind, he is playing for his third offensive coordinator in 4 years. That is something to watch, certainly. Tyrod Taylor was your quarterback 8 last year, threw for 3,000 yards, ran for nearly 600 yards, had 23 total touchdowns, despite having no receivers last year. Tyrod Taylor still had a quarterback rating pushing 90, better than Phillip Rivers, better than Carson Palmer, better than Eli Manning, better than Jameis Winston and Joe Flacco. Alex Gelhar, what does he do, Tyrod Taylor, in 2017?
First off, why does everybody keep hating on poor Tyrod?
I don't get it.
Every new organization is like they just said, we're going to have an open competition at quarterback with Nathan Peterman and Cardale Jones. Are you kidding me?
Come on, bro.
Are you kidding me?
I don't get it.
Are they kidding me, James? I really want to know. and also, like, fantasy. Like, I don't understand why Tyrod or what he has to do to get into the good graces of drafters this time of year. Perhaps it's because, like, it's never that splashy or sexy his numbers, but he's been so quietly consistent over the last 2 years. If you combine all the fantasy scoring the last years for quarterback, he's the 12th highest scoring quarterback for 2015 and 2016 combined.
It's pretty good.
That's with him missing 3 total games as well. He was injured last year, and then let's not forget he got benched for EJ Manuel in week 17 last year.
Got a tank.
But the thing is, he's probably the best and truest dual threat quarterback right now, the Konami code in fantasy in the NFL. He's the only quarterback with over 1,000 rushing yards in the last 2 years combined. Russell Wilson has seen his rushing attempts per game. I just saw this on Twitter from a friend, Graham Barfield, drop each of the last 3 years.
Interesting.
Cam is running a little less. They just went out and got a bunch of guys for him to be able to dump off shorter passes to. Tyrod's got wheels. He's got Sammy Watkins in a contract year. They're in a decent offense. They went and got Zay Jones. Like, I don't know what else we want. This guy right now is going after Andy Dalton and Eli Manning and right before Carson Wentz on my fantasy league right now. He scored 47 touchdowns and only committed 15 turnovers the last 2 years. Like, he's fantasy football gold. Why are you letting him fall that far down?
Because it's hard to fall in love with a guy when his own team doesn't seem to love him.
He's got something to prove.
That's administration, though. That to me is like when a network doesn't like a TV show, but then it still continues to do well. Like, Fox didn't like Family Guy and Arrested Development, but yet somehow they're amazing shows. And
it's a good point.
Family Guy in the first season legit was bad.
Well, once they started copying The Simpsons, we found the formula.
So we're saying Tyrod Taylor is the Arrested Development of fantasy football.
He's just copying Russell Wilson.
Oh,
no, but sometimes these guys are wrong and these administrations are wrong. Like, how many times you hear stories like, yeah, we didn't think much of this guy coming in, because coaches get it into their head like, I need this kind of player, I need that kind of player.
And it's a cheap way of them safeguarding their own butts, because they don't want to come in and be like, we're fully committed to Tyrod. And then if he does have a bad year, be like, whoops. But instead, if they come in and say, we're going to have an open competition, if he succeeds, they're like, look at that. The competition bred that. If he fails, they're like, well, that's the best our competition had to offer.
That's a pretty smart take.
We'll get more people there.
I agree with that. I agree with that a lot. What are you doing there with Sammy Watkins, though? He's going to be 24 years old, so he's young. He's only going into his fourth season. It feels like he's been in the league for about one quadrillion years. But an injury-plagued season cost him 8 games last year. He had 430 total yards, a disastrous season by any stretch of the imagination. Marcus, your thoughts on Sammy Watkins?
Do not want. I'm staying away, and because I tend to be a skeptic about this. So we've seen 3 years of Sammy Watkins struggling to stay on the field consistently. You know, he's good when he's there. It's just he always seems to be dealing with these nagging injuries, and nagging injuries to his, you know, his feet and his lower legs, which is a bad sign. So I'm at the point where there are always these players that I look at and I'm like, this dude very well may blow up and have a huge year. But I'm just too worried, so I'm going to stay away from him. And Sammy Watkins makes that list for me this year, where it's just like, look, everything could work out and be great. And you know what? I may just have to miss out on that because I'm too concerned.
All right, there's your look at the AFC East.
I'm buying in on Watkins this year.
You're all in?
I like it. Not all in, but like at the right price, definitely.
What's the right price?
I think I got him in the fourth round.
Fourth round?
I think I got him in the fourth or fifth round of our recent mock draft. Love that.
I smell a Brandon Cooks versus Sammy Watkins.
Oh, wager? Here we go. Oh,
I think I might take you up on that. Let's wait a couple weeks, do some research.
Let's do it now.
Want to have a beer bet?
Oh, 100%.
More fantasy points?
More fantasy points.
Accounting for injury, though?
No. Can't account for injury. That's the whole point with Sammy Watkins.
Really?
Okay, fine.
You know what I mean?
More fantasy points.
Oh.
It's
a beer.
Air shake through the glass right
air
now.
Air shake.
All right. Great radio, everybody. Definitely just imagine their minds.
I'll bring a nice beer from the Rip Brewing Company in Sunset Beach, California. Okay. Actually, I think it's Huntington Beach is the street address.
All right. Well, there we go.
That was a look at your AFC East. We're going to be following up next week a look at your NFC East, and we'll talk about the Cowboys, Giants, and all of those guys. They're in the NFC East. We'll try to break down every single division between now and your respective draft days. All right, let's close out the show with a round of Daily Dave.
Wait a minute. We have an interview.
We have a very special guest.
A guest calling in.
Correct. I don't know where.
Why don't you want him to be on this show?
I do.
James invites him on the show, and then is like, let's just blow past him.
You're right. All right, let's go.
That's so Hollywood of you.
Oh, my
God. Like, hey, come on the show. Oh, sorry, we didn't have time.
I'm the worst. I am the worst. All right, let's get to it. All right, happy to be joined alongside by the great Scott Fish. If you don't know him, you should know him. Scott, welcome to the program, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on. A little bit of protocol before I start. I listened to the show, and I'm curious, should I or should I not be wearing pants right now?
It's a great question. The answer is you should not if you're working from home.
I would say pants are optional. Wow. It's at your comfort and leisure.
Man. Okay, because I'll take them right off if you need me to.
I like, listen, do what you got to do, but like unless you're going to work or a funeral or something, why would you bother to wear pants anyways?
Work or funeral, that's it.
I don't really
Those
know.
Those are your options.
What else would you wear pants?
I don't know.
I'm not talking to, like, you're wearing shorts or something like that, but pants.
I mean, you can't wear pants at your house?
No.
Why
would you do such a thing?
I don't know.
Hey, I live in Minnesota. We need pants about 10 months out of the year.
Okay, there you go. I don't know how we went down this road.
Well, why would you even go outside then if you don't have
pants? Scott Fish from scottfishbowl.com. Listen, the reason we brought you on is because a lot of us play in this Scott Fish Bowl. This is going to be my first year doing it, but tell the listeners, what is the Scott Fish Bowl?
Sure. The Scott Fish Bowl, SFB, as I generally like to call it, because I just hate the name. But SFB is a 720-team pro-am with 480 analysts and 240 fans of those analysts. It has analysts from basically any site you can think of in the fantasy football industry. And it's divided up into 60 divisions, 60 12-man leagues. We play for 12 weeks, and then everybody is thrown together in a three-week or four-week playoff to try to get one big winner. It's a big deal for bragging rights, I think.
Oh, the bragging rights is the main reason why I think all these analysts play. No, I mean 720 entrants, my man. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah, every year it gets bigger and bigger. It's grown by at least 120 teams every year, and I can't even keep up anymore with the people that sign up. It's unreal.
You got to get yourself a team of interns, man, to, like, work through all the stuff. It's crazy. But I know it was fun last year for us. It was a lot of our first year. Marcus, Franchise, and Harmon and I were all in it. I think Harmon had been in the past. But the bragging rights were real there. Marcus and I were trying to remember. I think Franchise and I both made it to the postseason, and Harmon and Marcus were left on the outside. So we're excited to dive into the rules for this year and get ready to go again.
I'll ask you about some of the rules there. One of the more interesting rules you have is the fact that you give points for first downs gained. Why go down that road?
You know, there's a little bit of a groundswell in the industry of people who don't think a three-yard catch should be 13 points and equal a 13-yard run. And I've tried points for first down in basketball leagues. I wanted to try it in a league where I actually have to set rosters, and I wanted to see how the industry would react to it, because I think most of us can basically just set ourselves on auto draft when it comes to a PPR league or a standard league. I like to make the people playing actually have to work and actually think about it and strategize a little bit.
I like it.
That's what I liked about last year with partial points for carries, full point PPR for tight ends, partial PPR for other positions. Added a lot of nuance to how you were going to build your roster, and there were a lot of different strategies out there.
Yep, last year was all about balancing the positions against each other so that it created a ton of draft chaos. So you could pretty much apply any draft strategy you wanted and come out feeling good with yourself. That was a key of last year's draft.
I wanted a little bit of the history. I mean, how did this thing come about?
You know, in 2010. I used to run a website, and we had a reader league, much like your listeners' leagues. And we went around and just started asking some analysts to play in it. And before we knew it, we had 96 teams with, you know, several analysts around the industry, along with a bunch of our readers. And it just kind of kept going from there. After about 2 years, it was kind of stalemated, but I really went at it again in that third year, and since then it has just taken off like a cannon. Twitter has really helped it.
I want to know, like, the original impetus for it, though, right? Like, I mean, I know you were probably – I read a little bit about the history, and I know you didn't expect it to get this large, but once it started to get this big, why do you keep doing it? I mean, it's got to be such a bear for you.
I have a very easy answer for that. I really believe in pulling this community together and having us connect together, because I feel we're much stronger as a community when we support each other.
Yeah.
That's really what I'm going for here, is to have the big guys and the little guys and the big sites and the little guys actually get to know each other, especially and with the fans. But there's a lot of times on Twitter you don't know a lot of the people, and this gives you a chance to, you know, talk about the same draft and you know, become more of a community.
It's absolutely free to play. If somebody wanted to get involved, how do they go about doing it?
Oh, that's easy. ScottFishbowl.com. There's a sign up link on the top. We've had about 4,000 people sign up this year, which just blows my mind.
Do people get turned away? Bananas. Are you capping it?
I'm not capping sign ups, but yeah, I mean, we're capping the teams at 720. So yeah, I guess over 3,000 people are going to miss out this year. That is true.
Well, that's kind of uncool.
It's like, I don't know.
I
feel like Scott here is sort of the Willy Wonka of fantasy football. You
who
know?
Gets
like,
the golden ticket?
Right, who gets the golden ticket to get in?
He's like, I'm going to sell
it. There are definitely golden ticket memes that happen on Twitter. That is true. I feel bad. It's the worst email every year, because I do email the people who don't get in and let them know that they're on a wait list or whatever, but I feel terrible about that.
I'm sure they take it well.
So,
not too bad.
Scott, I wanted to ask you too, though. You have another initiative. You do a lot for the fantasy community and the other community. You started FantasyCares.net, a charity site that last year you said helped to get over $6,000 for Toys for Tots. I also see on the website for that, prizes available include Scott Fishbowl number 8 entries. Could you tell us a little more about Fantasy Cares and maybe what people could do for that, or how to help get in Scott Fishbowl number 8?
Yep. Basically, I run these best ball leagues. You just donate to the GoFundMe for that. I raise money through to donate toys to Toys for Tots every December. And don't worry, I show pictures, I show receipts, I do everything, so it's completely transparent. But I'm running a bunch of best ball leagues, and the winner of each one of these best ball leagues will get an SFB 8 entry. And there are going to be more prizes. There were more prizes last year. I have to talk to a few more sponsors. But it's something I'm really passionate about, the fantasy football industry doing something charitable. I always say, if you're in a money league, and just take one of those donations or one of those entry fees and give it to any charity of your choice, because if we all did that, the 10,000, 100,000 fantasy leagues that are out there all did that, we can make a really, really positive impact out there.
I mean, 100,000 leagues, you're selling it a little bit short there. But if everybody puts some in, yeah, you're right, it could make a huge impact. So cheers to you, man, for getting that started.
Look at the ball of positivity that is Scott Fish. Find him at scottfishbowl.com if you want to get involved. By the way, I know that you do run this site pretty much on your own, but is there a way people can help? I figure this is a pretty good entryway into, you know, fantasy football. If somebody wanted to help you, how could they do that?
Oh, man. I suppose they can shoot me an email. Most of it I do by myself, but I suppose there are things I could probably try to figure out. If someone wanted to, I usually leave my email pretty out there on Twitter, so they could follow me on Twitter at ScottFish24 and talk to me about it.
There's got to be a young fantasy aspiring, you know, somebody out there that wants to help this dude, and it's going to a good cause as well. As you could tell, Scott Fish, just an absolute ray of sunshine in a dark, cold fantasy universe.
Wow, way to sell it. Way to disparage the rest of us. But
at
ScottFish24 on Twitter. Find him there. Ask about the SFB. Talk about how you can help with Fantasy Cares. Great guy in the industry. Glad to have him as part of it.
I just bring that up. I only bring that up because I think about the Nihilist Arby's that you guys have pushed on this podcast.
Hey, I mean, that's just reality. That's not the fantasy community. The fantasy community is a ray of hope in the darkness of the beast.
All right, there you go. All right, the great Scott Fish. Find him at scottfishbowl.com. Scott, we appreciate your time, man.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, now we will close out.
Now. Go to Daily Daps.
Now. We will close out the show with Daily Daps.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hooks. Give me daps, because I'll be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up, daps abound, daps. Daps.
All right, Daily Dap time. We go to Adam Rank. What you got?
Mike Trout is the best GD player ever.
Ever. Wow.
It's over.
Okay.
The discussion is now over.
It's over?
Congratulations to everybody. You're witnessing the greatest baseball player who ever lived.
All right. Great.
The Titans' offensive line.
You're daily dapping them?
I'm daily dapping the Tennessee Titans' offensive line. I know a lot of you don't watch hockey.
Okay.
But they were there game three of the Stanley Cup Western Conference Finals. Yeah. They're playing host to the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim. And the offensive line of the Titans and Marcus Mariota are there in jerseys, you know, with their names and numbers on it. And the offensive line, they all pound tall boys.
Oh, wow.
Right before the game's about to start, pound tall boys. Marcus Mariota's jumping up and down, imploring everybody in the crowd to join in, which, number one, shows me he's back, baby. He's healthy and ready to go. So I like to see that spirit. Like
We should start doing that before podcast.
It would be great.
We just pound a tall boy.
But I kind of like that kind of thing because when you have – I like when the sports teams support each other. I know, and Anna, like, I'm not a Ducks fan because I'm not a soccer mom. But I'm not a Ducks fan.
Shots fired.
No, I'm just saying. That's their fan base. Like, that's a fact. And so Angel Stadium and the Pond of Anaheim are really, like,
well, across the freeway.
You're still calling it the Pond. Huh? You're not even going to call it the Honda Center by its proper name.
So Pond.
So
like
stupid.
15 years ago.
they're still the Ducks, so whatever. I think I called them the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim.
Which is also inaccurate.
I think
they
dropped the Mighty. I think they're still Anaheim, whatever. Okay. But they, you know, there's a lot of cross promotion. And when the Ducks were playing Edmonton, I know Mike Trout was in the crowd breaking my heart. And the Ducks, the song they play when they score a goal is Pennywise Bro Him. And now the Angels play it every time they hit a home run. And it's like, okay, I'll allow that.
Okay.
That's a cool thing.
All right.
I did want to give a dap to NXT Riverside. If you're burned out on professional wrestling, I suggest you give NXT a try because it's tremendous. Downtown Riverside, pretty cool, too. The University of Tennessee Twitter, I want to give them daps because apparently they thought they were getting on my case. Because I made a Peyton Manning joke yesterday, and they're like, oh, UT Twitter, we're giving it to Rank right now. And I'm like, if this is the kind of effort that you think is really giving it to somebody, it's no surprise that Peyton Manning only took you guys to the Citrus Bowl.
Oh.
And
wow.
What happened after that?
They're gone. They all just – they went away.
I mean
– okay.
They wilted.
You can't spell citrus without UT.
Yeah, buddy. Like, you should have more regard for T. Martin, who actually gave you a national championship.
It's a good thing Sean Sullivan left, Pat.
I told him. He knows. He knows.
He was up here behind the glass working on some boards for Move the Sticks.
He knows that UT Twitter is washed, so that's okay.
That's good.
And then the NBA draft lottery, one last little remark. But I will say that, you know what's funny is, like, I had to go because I usually go to Tsunami Sushi on Tuesday night, Taiwan Tuesday. I had to go find a TV that nobody was watching because all the TVs in the building, save one, tuned into Ducks hockey.
Good.
Which is kind of cool.
Perfect.
A lot of soccer moms in the building, though. I just thought I'd point that out.
All right. Marcus Grant, give me your daily daps.
I guess I'm going to kind of bring it down a little bit. I don't know. I just want a daily dap. Our friend and friend of the pod, Chris Wessling, who, in case any of you who listen to the ATN podcast know that he announced he's dealing with esophageal cancer, so he's taking some time off. The prognosis does sound positive, so that's definitely a good thing. But I just want to send, you know, free, obviously, if you listen to the ATN podcast, if you read his work, one of the most knowledgeable football guys certainly in the building here. But on top of that, just a really good dude. And, and you know, it's
great
hard to
writer.
Meet, it's hard to meet Chris Wessling and not immediately just like Chris Wessling. So I just want to give him a dap and then send our positive thoughts and, you know, the best wishes. And, you know, if anybody can beat this thing, it's Chris Wessling. So I just want to send out the
absolutely. I mean, they said on the recent episode that he went out the night after he announced that and played in the softball game for the NFL team, the Shield, and hit for the cycle. So
wow.
Yep, not keeping him down. expect Wes to kick the crap out of this and come back better and stronger than ever.
I like it. Alex Gilhar, what you got?
I mentioned it off the top. I only watched one episode so far, but I'm excited. Master of None has come back on Netflix. That's the Aziz Ansari show. Really great. The dialogue is just so phenomenal. The comedy's great. This first episode, I'm going to spoil anything, but it's an homage to Italian cinema, which was pretty fun.
Okay.
It's great. So check it out if you haven't already. It's a really good show on there when we're entering the summer and not as much show is around. Want to give a daily dap to Michael Schmidt, the New York Times reporter. He
not the Phillies third baseman.
How's like the Phillies third
baseman? Well, he broke the crazy story yesterday about James Comey and his memos.
Right.
But this is also the guy that broke the Hillary emails story and another big one that's escaping me right now.
So
but
he stepped into the FBI.
This guy's legit, and he's great, and it's exactly what you kind of want out of a free press. So it's not fake news. There are incredibly intelligent and diligent, hardworking people like Michael Schmidt and other reporters all over the place. So support him, follow him, and keep up with their news. But this guy's been grinding and breaking a lot of big stories. So
opposite
him.
End of the spectrum for myself.
Yes, from us. Well, wait, I got one more real quick.
Oh, please. Sorry.
Another journalistic one. I haven't finished the entire story yet because it's long, but Marcus mentioned it to me, and I saw a lot of people talking about it on Twitter yesterday. But it's called My Family's Slave by Alex Tizan. I think he's a former Pulitzer Prize-winning author and writer, passed away recently, but it's an article in The Atlantic about how his family, when they kind of immigrated here, basically had a slave in America in, like, the 1950s and 60s and 70s. And it's an incredible piece of writing, and it's really good. I'm about halfway through it right now. I would just encourage everybody to read it because
I know the premise sounds a little out there, but basically they came to America, and I'm just setting it up. But they came to America. They had their, you know, their house servant or whoever she was. She was basically, you know, a glorified nanny, right? But then they didn't pay her.
Right.
They gave her room and board. That was her payment.
Yes.
But
she had to do everything for
right.
this. And, like, they didn't let her travel and
exactly.
stuff like that frequently. So,
it's
a crazy story, and
yep.
it's really well written, but I would encourage everybody to go read it.
It's really, really good. And you're right. It is on The Atlantic.
The Atlantic, yes.
So go check it out. I'm going to go totally opposite
good.
End of the
we spectrum. Probably needed that.
I have been upset. I did not realize this, but a local radio station in town, Power 106, they bring on hip-hop artists, and they make them rap Llama Llama Red Pajama. It is a children's book, but they make them rap it to their own beats.
That's
right?
Amazing.
It is, I am telling
Are
you.
Are these on YouTube or something?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Llama Llama Red Pajama Freestyles.
Who have they had do it?
So they've had Ludacris. So they've had a lot of people. But here's the best ones. Migos. If you like,
oh,
by the
no.
If you love the Migos, you're going to love them even more. After watching Llama Llama Red Pajama,
okay.
he goes. They've had Ludacris, who was phenomenal. But my personal favorite was Designer.
Okay.
He got into it. But please go check it out. I'm telling you, I burned maybe 30 minutes just watching these things. They are amazing. GZ does one, but if you're a fan of GZ, don't watch it. Because
oh, no.
I'm a big fan of GZ, but it didn't go well.
Not good, huh?
It didn't go well. Designer, Migos, and Ludacris.
I'm going to look those up later today because that sounds incredible.
It is awesome. The second thing I will daily dap, this is, I'm telling you, I'm burning at least an hour of your day today.
You're always good for that, Jamie. Daily
Llama Llama Red Pajama Freestyles. And Google this. Hot Wheels Stunt Race. And there's a lot of them out there. But if you Google Hot Wheels Stunt Race slow-mo, there is one that will pop up. And I'll tweet it out as well. But basically, the photography on this thing is incredible. So what he does, he's got Hot Wheels of the A-Team van, of the Scooby-Doo van, the mystery van. He's got the Ghostbusters car. He's got the DeLorean from Back to the Future. And they're all in a race. And it's all produced, but I'm not doing it justice. I am telling you, find this video. Oh, my God. It is the best 6 minutes you will have today. It is awesome. You got to stick with it, though. You got to stick with it.
Got to stick with it, he said.
Got to stick with it. Oh, man. All right, so there you go. That's your show. For MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, the WizKid from Wisconsin, Alex Gelhar, and the Fantasy Maverick himself, Adam Rank, I'm James
Scott
Coe.
Scott Fish.
Scott Fish.
Do mock drafts.
Hey, did we hit 50 minutes?
We'll see you.
All right. It's very intense, but it's a lot of fun. All right. Shall we get this show on the road?
Let's do it.
Yep.
By the way, James, I have a hard time believing we're going to hit your 50-minute mark.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Simply because there's that gentleman sitting to your left.
I am
Marcus?
Marcus, yeah.
Yeah, me.
Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Big chatterbox over there.
I love it.
All right. But hey, who are we if we don't have goals and aspirations?
Exactly.